Hi, this is Mrs. English, and I'll be reading to you from Homer's Iliad. This is the Richmond Lattimore translation of Homer's Iliad. I'm reading from Book 20. Book 20, really books 20 to 22, the three books, are considered the Aristeia of Achilles. The Aristeia is when the hero will get his moments of glory, his moments of fame. This is his turn. This is Achilles' turn now to take center stage and show Homer's audience just what he can do, and to show Homer's audience what types of problems follow a bad temper. Book 20. So these now, the Achaeans, beside the curved ships, were arming around you, son of Peleus. And of course, now Homer's talking, speaking as though he's talking right to Achilles. Insatiate of battle, he can't get enough. While on the other side, at the break of the plain, the Trojans armed. But Zeus, from the many-folded peak of Olympus, told Themis to summon all the gods into assembly. She went everywhere and told them to make their way to Zeus's house. There was no river who was not there, except only ocean. There was not any one of the nymphs who live in the lovely groves, and the springs of rivers and grass of the meadows who came not. Line 10. These all assembling into the house of Zeus, gathering, took places among the smooth stone cloister walks which Hephaestus had built for Zeus the father by his craftsmanship and contrivance. Remember that Hephaestus built homes for all the immortals, and so they're walking around through this stone cloister walk. So they were assembled within Zeus's house, and the shaker of the earth did not fail to hear the goddess, but came up among them from the sea, and sat in the midst of them, Poseidon, and asked Zeus of his counsel. Why, Lord of the Shining Bolt, have you called the gods to assembly once more? Are you deliberating, Achaeans and Trojans? For the onset of battle is almost broken to flame between them. They're almost on fire. In turn, Zeus, who gathers the clouds, spoke to him in answer. Line 20. You have seen, Shaker of the Earth, the counsel within me, and why I gathered you. Think of these men, though they are dying. Even so, I shall stay here upon the fold of Olympus, sitting still, watching, to pleasure my heart. Meanwhile, all you others, go down, wherever you may go among the Achaeans and Trojans, and give help to either side as your own pleasure directs you. For if we leave Achilles alone to fight with the Trojans, they will not even for a little hold off swift-footed Pelion, Achilles. For even before now they would tremble whenever they saw him, and now, when his heart is grieved and angered for his companion's death, I fear against destiny he may storm their fortress. Line 30. So why is he going to allow the gods to all go down and fight to forestall the war so that Zeus can watch for a while longer? So spoke the son of Cronus and woke the incessant battle, and the gods went down to enter the fighting with purposes opposed. Hera went to the assembled ships with Pallas Athena, and with Poseidon, who embraces the earth, and with generous Hermes, who within the heart is armed with astute thoughts. Hephaestus went the way of these in the pride of his great strength, Olympian, and yet his shrunken legs moved lightly beneath him. Now, where are all these gods going? Athena, Hera, Poseidon, Hermes, Hephaestus, they're all going beside the ships, the assembled ships, so who are they going off to help? Then the next group of gods, line 38. But Ares of the shining helm went over to the Trojans, and with him Phoebus of the unshorn hair, which means uncut hair, so Apollo has long hair, and the lady of arrows, Artemis, and smiling Aphrodite, Leto, and Xanthus. Line 40. So who's going to help the Trojans? Now in the time when the gods were still distant from the mortals, so long the Achaeans were winning great glory, Megacleos, since now Achilles showed among them who had stayed too far from the sorrowful fighting. The Trojans were taken every man in the knees with trembling and terror as they looked on the swift-footed son of Peleus, shining in all his armor, a man like the murderous war god. But after the Olympians merged in the men's company, strong hatred, defender of peoples, burst out, and Athena bellowed, standing now beside the ditch dug at the walls outside, and now again at the thundering sea's edge gave out her great cry, while on the other side, in the likeness of a dark storm cloud, bellowed, now from the peak of the citadel, urging the Trojans sharply on, now running beside the sweet banks of Simois. So who's storming? This is Athena. This is Athena, bellowed, standing now, line 48, beside the ditch, and then next at the sea's edge, and then on the other side, Ares, like a storm cloud, bellows, and from the peak of the citadel, top of the city, urging the Trojans sharply on, then he runs beside the sweet banks of Simois. And so who is hollering? Athena and Ares, and they're battling, of course, on opposite sides. So the blessed gods, stirring on the opponents, drove them together and broke out among themselves the weight of their quarrel. Line 55. From high above, the father of gods and men made thunder terribly, while Poseidon, from deep under them, shuddered all the illimitable earth, the sheer heads of the mountains, and all the feet of Ida, which is a mountain, with her many waters, were shaken, and all her crests, and the city of Troy, the ships of the Achaeans. Line 60. Idaeneus, Hadaeneus, which is Hades, lord of the dead below, was in terror and sprang from his throne and screamed aloud, for fear that above him, he who circles the land, Poseidon, might break the earth open and the houses of the dead lie open to men and mortals. Ghastly and moldering, so the very gods shudder before them. Such was the crash that sounded as the gods came driving together in wrath. For now, over against the lord Poseidon, Phoebus Apollo took his stand with his feathered arrows. So who is Apollo fighting? He's fighting his uncle Poseidon. And against Enyalius, who is also Ares, the goddess gray-eyed Athena. They've been shouting at each other, now they're facing off. Line 70. Against Hera stood the lady of clamor, of the golden distaff, of the showering arrows, Artemis, sister of the far striker. Sister to Apollo. Opposite Leto stood the strong one, generous Hermes, and against Hephaestus stood the great deep eddying river, who is called Xanthus by the gods, but by mortals Scamandrus. Line 75. Thus gods went on to encounter gods, and meanwhile Achilles was straining to plunge into the combat opposite Hector, Priam's son, since beyond all others his anger was driving him to glut with his blood Ares, the god who fights under the shield's guard. But it was Aeneas whom Apollo, defender of people, drove straight against Pelion, and inspired vast power within him. Zeus's son Apollo made his voice like that of Lycaon, Priam's son, and assumed his appearance and spoke to Aeneas. Aeneas, lord of the Trojans' counsels, where are those threats gone which, as you drank your wine, you made before kings? Troy's kings, solemnly, that you would match your battle strength with Pelion Achilles. In turn, Aeneas spoke to him in answer, Lycaon, son of Priam, why do you urge me on against my will to fight in the face of Peleus' son and his too great fury? Since this will not be the first time I stand up against swift-footed Achilles, but another time before now he drove me with the spear from Ida, when he came there after our cattle, the time he sacked Lyrnessus and Pedasus. But Zeus rescued me, when he put strength inside me and made my knees quick. Otherwise I should have gone down at Achilles' hands, and those of Athena, who goes before him and makes light before him, who then was urging him on with the brazen spear to destroy Leleges and Trojans. Thereby, it is not for any man to fight with Achilles. There is always some one of the gods with him to beat death from him. Without this, even his spear wings straight to its mark, and nor gives out until it has gone through a man's body. But if the god only would pull out even the issue of war, he would not so easily win, not even though he claims to be made all of bronze. So Aeneas is complaining that Achilles can't be killed, the gods protect him. In turn, the lord, the son of Zeus, Apollo, spoke to him, Hero, then make your prayer, you also, to the everlasting gods, since they say that you yourself are born of Zeus's daughter, Aphrodite, line 105. But Achilles was born of a lesser goddess, Aphrodite being daughter of Zeus, Thetis of the seas ancient. And the mention here of the seas ancient is the old man of the sea, or Nereus. Carry your weariless bronze straight against him. Let him by no means turn you back by blustering words and his threats of terror. So speaking, he inspired enormous strength in the shepherd of the people, line 110, who strode on his way among the champions helmed in the bright bronze. Nor did Hera of the White Arms fail to see the son of Anchises as he went through the thronging men to face the son of Peleus, and drew the other immortals about her and spoke to them, saying, Poseidon and Athena, now take counsel between you and within your hearts as to how these matters should be accomplished. Here is Aeneas gone helmed in the shining bronze against Peleus's son, and it was Phoebus Apollo who sent him. Come then, we must go down ourselves and turn him back from here, or else one of us must stand by Achilles and put enormous strength upon him, and let him not come short in courage, but let him know that they love him who are highest of the immortals. But those who before now fended the fury of war, as now, from the Trojans are as wind and nothing. For all of us have come down from Olympus to take our part in this battle, so nothing may be done to him by the Trojans on this day. Afterwards he shall suffer such things as destiny wove with the strand of his birth that day he was born to his mother. But if Achilles does not hear all this from God's voices, he will be afraid. When a god puts out his strength against him in the fighting, it is hard for gods to be shown in their true shape. In turn, Poseidon, the shaker of the earth, answered her, Hera, do not be angry without purpose. It does not become you, since I, at least, would not have the rest of us gods encounter in battle, since, indeed, we are far too strong for them. Line 135. Let us then go away and sit down together off the path at a viewing place, and let the men take care of their fighting. Only if Ares begins to fight, or Phoebus Apollo, or if they hold Achilles back and will not let him fight, then at once they will have a quarrel with us on their hands in open battle. But soon, I think, when they have fought with us, they will get back to Olympus and the throng of the other gods, beaten back by the overmastering strength of our hands. So he spoke, Poseidon of the dark hair, and led the way to the stronghold of godlike Heracles, earth-piled on both sides, a high place, which the Trojans and Pallathena had built him as a place of escape, where he could get away from the sea-beast when the charging monster drove him away to the plain from the seashore. There Poseidon and the gods who were with him sat down, and gathered a breakless wall of cloud to darken their shoulders, so they're hiding, line 150, while they of the other side sat down on the brows of the sweet bluffs around you, Lord Apollo, and Ares, sacker of cities. So they on either side took their places, deliberating counsels, reluctant on both sides to open the sorrowful attack. But Zeus, sitting on high above, urged them on. But all the plain was filled and shining with bronze of the mortals, their men and horses, and underneath their feet the earth staggered as they swept together. Two men far greater than all the others were coming to encounter, furious to fight with each other, Aeneas, line 160, the son of Anchises and Aphrodite, and brilliant Achilles. First of the two, Aeneas had strode forth in menace, tossing his head beneath the heavy helm, and he held the stark shield in front of his chest and shook the brazen spear. From the other side, the son of Peleus rose like a lion against him, the baleful beast, when men have been straining to kill him, the country, all in the hunt, and he, at the first, pays them no attention but goes his way. Only when some one of the impetuous young men has hit him with a spear, he whirls, jaws open, over his teeth foam breaks out, and in the depth of his chest the powerful heart groans. He lashes his own ribs with his tail and the flanks on both sides as he rouses himself to fury for the fight, eyes glaring, and hurls himself straight onward on the chance of killing some one of the men, or else being killed himself in the first onrush. All right. So the proud heart and fighting fury stirred on Achilles to go forward in the face of great-hearted Aeneas. Now, as these in their advance had come close to each other, first of the two to speak was swift-footed, brilliant Achilles. Aeneas, why have you stood so far forth from the multitude against me? Does the desire in your heart drive you to combat in hope you will be lord of the Trojans, breakers of horses, and of Priam's honor? And yet, even if you were to kill me, Priam would not, because of that, rest such honor on your hand. He has sons, and he himself is sound, not weakened. Or have the men of Troy promised you a piece of land, surpassing all others, fine plough-land and orchard for you to administer if you kill me? But I think that killing will not be easy. Another time before this, I tell you, you ran from my spear. Or do you not remember when, apart from your cattle, I caught you alone and chased you in the speed of your feet down the hills of Ida headlong, and that time as you ran, you did not turn to look back. Line 190. Then you got away into Lyrnessus, but I went after you and stormed that place, and with the help of Athena and of Zeus' father, and took the Day of Liberty away from their women and led them as spoil. But Zeus and the other gods saved you. I think they will not save you now, as your expectation tells you they will. No, but I myself urge you to get back into the multitude, not stand to face me before you take some harm. Once a thing has been done, the fool sees it. Then in turn Aeneas spoke to him and made his answer. Son of Peleus, never hope by words to frighten me, line 200, as if I were a baby. I myself understand well enough how to speak in vituperation, and how to make insults, how to vaunt. You and I know each other's birth. We both know our parents, since we have heard the lines of their fame from mortal men. Only I have never with my eyes seen your parents, nor have you seen mine. For you, they say, you are the issue of blameless Peleus, and that your mother was Thetis of the lovely hair, the seas lady. I, in turn, claim I am the son of great-hearted Anchises, but that my mother was Aphrodite, and that of these parents, one group or the other will have a dear son to mourn for this day. Since I believe we will not in mere words like children meet and separate and go home again out of the fighting. Even so, if you wish to learn all this and be certain of my genealogy, there are plenty of men who know it. Line 215. First of all, and here we have the genealogy. First of all, Zeus, who gathers the clouds, had a son, Dardanus, who founded Dardania, since there was yet no sacred Ilion. Troy made a city in the plain to be a center of peoples. But they lived yet in the underhills of Ida with all her waters. Dardanus, in turn, had a son, the king, Erechtheus, who became the richest of mortal men, and in his possession were 3,000 horses who pastured along the low grasslands, mares in their pride with their young colts, and with these the north wind fell in love as they pastured there and took on upon him the likeness of a dark-maned stallion and coupled with them, and the mares conceiving of him bore to him 12 young horses. Those, when they would play along the grain-giving tilled land, would pass along the tassels of corn and not break the divine yield. But again, when they played across the sea's wide ridges, they would run the edge of the wave where it breaks on the gray salt water. Line 230. We continue the genealogy. First we had Dardanus, and then we had Erechtheus. Erechtheus. And of course this is the first king of Athens, for whom the Erechtheion is named. Line 230. Erechtheus had a son, Tros, who was lord of the Trojans, and to Tros, in turn, there were born 3 sons unfaulted, Ilus, Assaracus, and godlike Ganymedes, who was the loveliest born of the race of mortals, and therefore the gods caught him away to themselves to be Zeus's wine-pourer or cup-bearer, for the sake of his beauty, so he might be among the immortals. Ilus, in turn, was given a son, the blameless Laomedon, and Laomedon had sons in turn, Tithonus and Priam, Lampus, Clytius, and Hictaeon, Scion of Ares. But Assaracus had Capys, and Capys' son was Anchises, and I am Anchises' son, and Priam's is Hector, the brilliant, so they are cousins, Aeneas and Hector. Such is the generation and blood I claim to be born from. So Aeneas can take his genealogy all the way back to Zeus, having a son, Dardanus, who had Erechtheus, who had Tros, who had 3 sons, and then one of those, Ilus, had Laomedon, and Laomedon had 5 sons, one of those, Priam, and then now we have Aeneas. Let's see. Such is the generation and blood I claim to be born from. Zeus builds up, and Zeus diminishes the strength in men the way he pleases, since his power is beyond all others. But come, let us no longer stand here talking of these things like children, here in the space between the advancing armies, for there are harsh things enough that could be spoken against us both. A ship of 100 locks could not carry the burden. The tongue of man is a twisty thing. There are plenty of words there of every kind. The range of words is wide, and their variants. The sort of thing you say is the thing that will be said to you, line 250. But what have you and I to do with the need for squabbling and hurling insults at each other, as if we were 2 wives who, when they have fallen upon a heart-perishing quarrel, go out on the street and say abusive things to each other? Much true, and much that is not, and it is their rage that drives them. 255. You will not by talking turn me back from the strain of my warcraft, not till you have fought to my face with the bronze. Come on, then, and let us try each other's strength with the bronze of our spearheads." He spoke, and on the terrible grim shield drove the ponderous pike, so that the great shield moaned as it took the spearhead. The son of Peleus, Achilles, with his heavy hand, held the shield away from him in fright, since he thought the far-shadowing spear of great-hearted Aeneas would lightly be driven through it. Fool! And the heart and spirit of him could not understand how the glorious gifts of the god are not easily broken. So Achilles did not understand that this beautiful new shield he has could not easily be broken by mortal men, how such gifts will not give way before them. Nor this time could the ponderous spear of war-wise Aeneas smash the shield, since the god stayed it, the god held it back, the god's gift. Indeed, he did drive the spear through two folds, but there were three left still. Remember, there are five layers, since the god of the dragging feet had made five folds on it, line 270, two of bronze on the outside, and on the inside two of tin, and between them the single gold, and in this the ash spear was held fast. After him Achilles let go his spear, far-shadowing, and struck the shield of Aeneas along its perfect circle, at the utter rim where the circle of bronze ran thinnest about it, line 275, and the oxhide was laid thinnest there. The Pelian ash spear crashed clean through it there, and the shield cried out as it went through. Aeneas shrank down and held the shield away and above him in fright, and the spear went over his back and crashed its way to the ground and fixed there, after tearing apart two circles of the man-covering shield. But Aeneas, free of the long spear, stood still, and around his eyes gathered the enormous emotion and fear that the weapon had fixed so close to him. Now Achilles drew his tearing sword and swept in fury upon him, crying a terrible cry. But Aeneas, now in his hand, caught up a stone, a huge thing, which no two men could carry, such as men are now, but by himself he lightly hefted it. And there Aeneas would have hit him with the stone as he swept in on helm or shield, which would have fended the bitter death from him. And Peleus' son, line 290, would have closed with the sword and stripped the life from him, had not the shaker of the earth, Poseidon, sharply perceived all, and immediately spoken his word out among the immortals. "Ah me, I am full of sorrow, this is Poseidon, for great-hearted Aeneas, who must presently go down to death, overpowered by Achilles, because he believed the words of Apollo, the far-ranging. Poor fool, since Apollo will do nothing to keep grim death from him. But why does this man, who is guiltless, suffer his sorrows for no reason? For the sake of others' unhappiness, and always he gives gifts that please them to the gods who hold the wide heaven. But come, let us ourselves get him away from death, for fear the son of Cronos may be angered if now Achilles kills this man. It is destined that he shall be the survivor, that the generation of Dardanus shall not die. And who is Dardanus? The original founder of Troy, and this is why Trojans are called Dardanians. Greeks are Danans. Trojans are Dardanians. And this is a type of a prophecy that Virgil, 19 BC, is going to grab onto, and that is why the hero of his Aeneid is Aeneas. This is speaking of Aeneas, and this is Poseidon, line 302 again. Poseidon speaking about Aeneas. "It is destined that he shall be the survivor, that the generation of Dardanus shall not die without seed obliterated, since Dardanus was dearest to Cronides of all his sons," okay, Cronos, "that have been born to him from mortal women. For Cronus's son has cursed the generation of Priam. And now the might of Aeneas shall be lord over the Trojans, and his sons' sons, and those who are born of their seed thereafter." In turn, the lady of the ox-eyes, Hera, answered him, line 310, "Shaker of the earth, you yourself must decide in your own heart about Aeneas, whether to rescue him or to let him go down, for all his strength, before Peleus' son Achilles. For we too, Pallas Athena and I, have taken numerous oaths and sworn them in the sight of all the immortals never to drive the day of evil away from the Trojans." All right, so Athena and Hera are never going to prevent a Trojan from being killed. "And not even when all the city of Troy is burned in the ravening fire on that day when the warlike sons of the Achaeans burn it." Here is Hera talking to Poseidon, saying they will not lift a hand to help a Trojan. Poseidon's looking for help for Aeneas. Hera and Athena are not going to give any Trojan help, and we find out that the gods already know that the Achaeans are going to burn down Troy. When he had heard this, the shaker of the earth, Poseidon, went on his way through the confusion of spears and the fighting, line 320, and came to where Aeneas was, and renowned Achilles. There, quickly, he drifted a mist across the eyes of one fighter, Achilles, Peleus's son, and from the shield of Aeneas of the Great Heart, pulled loose the strong bronze-headed ash spear, and laid it down again before the feet of Achilles. But Aeneas, so Poseidon gives the spear, he takes it out of Aeneas' shield, and gives it back to Achilles by his feet. But Aeneas, line 325, he lifted high from the ground, and slung him through the air, so that many ranks of fighting men, many ranks of horses, were overvaulted by Aeneas, hurled by the god's hand. He landed at the uttermost edge of the tossing battle, where the Caconians were arming them for the order of fighting, and Poseidon, shaker of the earth, came and stood very near him, line 330, and spoke to him and addressed him in winged words, "Aeneas, which one of the gods it is who urges you to such madness that you fight in the face of Peleus' son, against his high courage, though he is both stronger than you and dearer to the immortals?" So Poseidon says to Aeneas, "Which one of the gods told you to do this?" Line 335, "Go back, rather, whenever you find yourself thrown against him, lest beyond your fate you go down into the house of the death god. But once Achilles has fulfilled his death and his destiny, then take courage and go on and fight with their foremost, since there shall be no other Achaean able to kill you." So what has Poseidon just revealed to Aeneas? Whenever he finds himself thrown against Achilles, line 335, give back, rather. So get away from there. Wait until Achilles is dead, because there's no other Achaean, line 339, who's able to kill you. He spoke, and left him there when he had told him all this, and at once scattered the mist away from the eyes of Achilles that the gods had sent, so now Achilles can see. And now he looked with his eyes, and saw largely, and in disgust spoke then to his own great-hearted spirit, "Can this be? Here's a strange thing I see with my own eyes. Here's my spear lying on the ground, but I can no longer see the man, whom I was charging in fury to kill him. Aeneas was then one beloved of the immortal gods. I thought what he said was ineffectual boasting. Let him go. He will not again have daring to try me in battle, since even now he was glad to escape my onset," line 350. "Come, I must urge on the Danaans, whose delight is in battle, and go on to face the rest of the Trojans and see what they can do." He spoke, and leapt back into the ranks, and urged each man on. "No longer stand away from the Trojans, O great Achaeans, Greeks, but let each one go to face his man, furious to fight him," line 355. "It is a hard thing for me, for all my great strength, to harry the flight of men in such numbers, or to fight with all of them. And not Ares, who is a god immortal, not even Athena, could take the edge of such masses of men and fight a way through them. But what I can do with hands and feet and strength, I tell you," line 360, "I will do, and I shall not hang back even a little, but go straight on through their formation, and I think that no man of the Trojans will be glad when he comes within my spear's range." He spoke, urging them on, but glorious Hector called out in a great voice to the Trojans, and was minded to face Achilles. "Do not be afraid of Pelion, Achilles, O high-hearted Trojans. I myself could fight in words against the immortals, but with the spear it were hard, since they are far stronger than we are. Even Achilles will not win achievement of everything he says. Part he will accomplish, but part shall be balked halfway done. I'm going to stand against him now, though his hands are like flame, though his hands are like flame, and his heart like the shining of iron." He spoke, urging the Trojans, and they lifted their spears to face them. Their fury gathered into bulk, and their battle cry rose up. Line 375. But now Phoebus Apollo stood by Hector and spoke to him, "Hector, do not go out all alone to fight with Achilles, but wait for him in the multitude and out of the carnage, lest he hit you with the spear or the stroke of the sword from close in." He spoke, and Hector plunged back into the swarm of the fighting men in fear when he heard the voice of the god speaking. But Achilles, gathering the fury upon him, sprang on the Trojans with a ghastly cry, and the first of them he killed was Iphition, the great son of Ontrinitus, and a lord over numbers of people, born of a naiad nymph to Ontrinitus, sacker of cities, under the snows of Tmolus, in the rich countryside of Hyde. Great Achilles struck him with the spear as he came in fury, in the middle of the head, and all the head broke into two pieces. He fell thunderously. The great Achilles vaunted above him. "Lie there, O Trinitius's son, most terrifying of all men. Here is your death, line 390. But your generation was by the lake waters of Gyge, where is the allotted land of your fathers by fish-swarming Hylas and the whirling waters of Hermus." He spoke, vaunting, but darkness shrouded the eyes of the other, and the running rims of Achaean chariots cut him to pieces in the van of the onrush. Next after him, facing Demoleon, lord defender of battle and son of Antenor, Achilles stabbed him in the temple through the brazen sides of the helmet, and the brazen helmet could not hold. But the bronze spearhead, driven on through, smashed the bone apart, and the inward brain was all spattered forth. So he beat him down in his fury, line 400. Next he stabbed with a spear stroke in the back Hippodamus, as he fled away before him and sprang from behind his horses. He blew his life away, bellowing, what was it like? As when a bull bellows, as he is dragged for Poseidon, lord of Helice, and the young men drag him. In such bulls the earth-shaker glories. Such was his bellowing as the proud spirit flitted from his bones. Next he went with the spear after godlike Polydorus, Priam's son, whom his father would not let go into battle because he was youngest born of all the sons to him, and also the most beloved, and in speed of his feet outpassed all the others, line 410. But now, in his young thoughtlessness and display of his running, he swept among the champions, until thus he destroyed his dear life. For as he shot by, swift-footed, brilliant Achilles hit him with a spear thrown in the middle of the back, where the clasps of the war belt were golden, and came together at the joining halves of the corslet, line 415. So this young prince, the youngest born of all his sons and most beloved, was not allowed to go out, and he went out against instruction, and now he's dead. The spearhead held its way straight on and came out by the navel, and he dropped, moaning, on one knee as the dark mist gathered about him and sagged and caught with his hands at his bowels in front of him. But now when Hector saw Polydorus, his own brother, going limp to the ground and catching his bowels in his hands, line 420, the mist closed about his eyes also. He could stand no longer to turn there at a distance, but went out to face Achilles, hefting his sharp spear like a flame. Seeing him, Achilles balanced his spear in turn and called out to him and challenged him. "Here is the man who beyond all others has troubled my anger, who slaughtered my beloved companion. Let us no longer shrink away from each other along the edgeworks of battle." He spoke, and looking darkly at brilliant Hector, spoke to him. "Come nearer, so that sooner you may reach your appointed destruction." But with no fear, Hector of the Shining Helm answered him, line 430, "Son of Peleus, never hope by words to frighten me as if I were a baby. I myself understand well enough how to speak in vituperation and how to make insults. I know that you are great and that I am far weaker than you are. Still, line 435, all this lies upon the knees of the gods. And it may be that, weaker as I am, I might still strip the life from you with a cast of the spear, since my weapon too has been sharp before this." He spoke, and balanced the spear and let it fly, but Athena blew against it and turned it back from renowned Achilles with an easy blast. It came back again to glorious Hector and dropped to the ground in front of his feet. Meanwhile, Achilles made a furious charge against him, raging to kill him with a terrible cry. But Phoebus Apollo caught up Hector easily, since he was a god, and wrapped him in thick mist. Three times, line 445, three times swift-footed, brilliant Achilles swept in against him with the brazen spear. Three times his stroke went into the deep mist. But as a fourth time, like something more than a man, he charged in, Achilles, with a terrible cry, called in winged words after him, "Once again now you escaped death, dog, and yet the evil came near you. But now once more Phoebus Apollo has saved you, he to whom you must pray when you go into the thunder of spears thrown. Yet I may win you if I encounter you ever hereafter, if beside me also there is some god who will help me. Now I must chase whoever I can overtake of the others." He spoke, and with the spear full in the neck, stabbed Dryops, so that he dropped in front of his feet. He left him to lie there, and with a spear thrown against the knee, stopped the charge of Demuchus, Philetor's son, a huge man and powerful. After the spear cast, with an inward plunge of the great sword, he took the life from him. Then Achilles, swooping on Dardanus and Laugonus, sons both of Bias, dashed them to the ground from behind their horses, one with a spear cast, one with a stroke of the sword from close up. Now Tros, Alastor's son, he had come up against Achilles' knees to catch them and be spared and his life given to him if Achilles might take pity upon his youth and not kill him. So he's supplicating. Fool. And did not see there would be no way to persuade him, since this was a man with no sweetness in his heart, and not kindly, but in a strong fury. Now Tros, with his hands, was reaching for the knees, bent on supplication, but he stabbed with his sword at the liver, so that the liver was torn from its place, and from it the black blood drenched the fold of his tunic, and his eyes were shrouded in darkness as the life went. Next, from close in, he thrust at Mulius with the pike at the ear, so the bronze spearhead pushed through and came out at the other ear. Now he hit Echeclus, the son of Agenor, with the hilted sword, hewing against his head in the middle, so all the sword was smoking with blood, and over both eyes closed the red death and the strong destiny. Now Deucalion was struck in the arm, at a place in the elbow where the tendons come together. There, through the arm, Achilles transfixed him with the bronze spearhead, and he, arm hanging heavy, waited and looked his death in the face. Achilles struck with the sword's edge at his neck and swept the helmed head far away, and the marrow gushed from the neck bone, and he went down to the ground at full length. Now he went on after the blameless son of Peres, Rigamus, who had come over from Thrace, where the soil is rich. Line 485. This man he stabbed in the middle with the spear, and the spear stuck fast in his belly. He dropped from the chariot, but as Eurytheus, his henchman, turned the horses away, Achilles stabbed him with the sharp spear in the back and thrust him from the chariot. And the horses bolted. Line 490. What's it like when the horses bolted? As inhuman fire sweeps on in fury through the deep angles of a drywood mountain and sets ablaze the depth of the timber, and the blustering wind lashes the flame along, so Achilles swept everywhere with his spear, like something more than a mortal, harrying them as they died, and the black earth ran blood. Or, what else was it like? Or, as when a man yokes male, broad-foreheaded oxen to crush white barley on a strong-laid threshing floor, and rapidly the barley is stripped beneath the feet of the bellowing oxen, so before great-hearted Achilles the single-foot horses trampled alike dead men and shields, and the axle under the chariot was all splashed with blood, and the rails which encircled the chariot struck by flying drops from the feet of the horses, from the running rims of the wheels. The son of Peleus was straining to win glory. His invincible hands spattered with bloody filth. And so ends Book 20.